What is it? We are on the at the end of line 51. Abba Sikra, Abba Sikra Reish Biryonim Yerushalayim. Abba Sikra, who was the head of the Biryonim in Yerushalayim, was Bar Achtei, was the nephew to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Habo Shelach Le, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai sent him a message. The message had three words: To Bitzina Ole Gaboi, come secretly to me. Also, the nephew came to his great uncle. Omalei, and the uncle says, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, Ad emas avidetu hochi, how much longer are you going to continue this way? Omalei, so Abba Sikra, the head of the Biryonim, says to his uncle, Mai I avid, what can I do? De'i amina leho midei, if I'll mention one thing of conciliation to them, you know what they're going to do to me? They'll have two words for me, katluli, they'll kill me on the spot. Now here is the head of the Biryonim who was able to do what? Who was able to marshal these forces and harness them into a corporate entity, into a body, into a political party. Here the leader, in whom they place their trust, tells his uncle in all honesty, if I tell my troops to call it off now, you know what they're going to do to me? They're going to kill me. The vexation, the confusion of leadership. I have my life to have to worry about. I'm putting my life on the line. They are firmer than I am. They are more right-wing than I am. They are more spirited than I am. They are crazier than I am. And if I'll say anything to them, that will be of the slightest smell of what? Of appeasement. The kind of politics that you represent, you know what they're going to do to me? They will kill me. That's Abbas. Who did I say about it? I said it about every Chassidish Rebbe today, probably. They wanted to do in the Satmar Rebbe, the old Satmar Rebbe, the young ones. Lubavitch has the same problem. As soon as they feel that they don't like a direction that the Lubavitcher Rebbe is taking, so the young god is already yelling that he is overbottle, in other words, he's senile. Yeah. You may all, it's after Chatzos. Furthermore, Mutal Hashevet Alans. Furthermore, I'll tell you clearly. There is no question in my mind that 9 out of 10 Russia yeshivas exist with this problem. That somehow there is always a lunatic fringe among their Talmidim, and they are afraid to say anything because they're liable to leave the yeshiva is liable to close. I said it about the Chofetz Chaim, probably within the last couple of days. Chofetz Chaim and Radin had a situation where they did not like the style, the brand of Torah, of one of the rabbis who was the Mashgiach there. Now you had a choice, Chofetz Chaim, either to get them to leave the yeshiva or to discharge the Mashgiach. Chofetz Chaim came into the Beis Medrash and simply said, I'm closing the yeshiva. You don't like it, you can go. Now he withstood, because he was the 1 out of the 10. He's not the other 9. I'm telling you clearly that issues exist. I think I mentioned to some of you several years ago in the Telz Kollel, the Kollel that was built by the entire Telz Yeshiva and the Rosh Yeshiva there. And then his heirs, Rav Sorotskin and Rav Gifta in Cleveland. They came to him after years, decades, and they said, we don't like the Jewish education here in the day school of Cleveland. And he said to them, we are the Board of Education, tells. We are the teachers, tells. There is no one who tells us how to teach and how not to teach. What is there not to like? I say it's good, says the Rosh Yeshiva. They said to him, we want to open up our own cheder. We want to open up our kind of education, different, not a day school. It shouldn't be called the Cleveland Hebrew Day School. And he said, no, your children are getting the right chinuch. And we have a high school here for boys and for girls, and a higher education for boys and for girls. This is the route to take. Don't open up a separate one. 3 weeks later, they opened up a separate one. Now, he could have made a stink. There's no question about it. But he would have lost the whole yeshiva. The vexation of leadership. Now, that was his decision. It was different than the Chofetz Chaim's. What can I do? But to listen to shiurim, I'm good enough. To come ask me to paskin on whether this piece of meat is good or not good, I'm good enough. To give you shiurei das, in other words, that is the Telza brand of Musar, it's specifically shiurei das, that I'm good enough. To be called Rosh Yeshiva, that I'm good enough. To get shlishi because I'm Rosh Yeshiva and sit up front, that I'm good enough. But when you come and you ask me a shaila and I tell you that this is not the way, that I'm not good enough. The vexation of leadership. You are frumer than my children, you need a better education for your children than I had for my children, who are by now Rosh Yeshivas and daughters of Rosh Yeshivas. This is the vexation of leadership. Even the Biryonim, Abba Sikra, feared for his life by virtue of the boomerang effect of this Biryonim kind of an attitude. Mob scene.
Mob
rule. You don't know what to do. You just don't know what to do. Let's get back to the Gemara. Enough contemporary politics. But how we are doomed, and if not doomed, destined to be able, especially us who sit and learn the Gemara, right? To be able to repeat the mistakes and the evils that Rabbi Yochanan wanted to impress as religious values, not as a political statement, not as an historical statement. I mean, you learn politics and religion from it, okay, I have no problem with that. But we are talking about religious ideal and how we are doomed to repeat it sometimes. And we have to stop and ask why. I don't know that I have the answer to that why. But let's continue. The vexation of leadership. We are on line 54. The end of the line. Omalei, says Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai to his nephew, Chazei li takanto, come up with a plan, ledidi de'epuk, so that I can get out of this city, efshar, and possibly, I don't know what I can do, but efshar dehavei hatzola pursa, maybe I'll be able to save the situation somewhat, but to continue in your way, we are only all headed for disaster. Omalei, so Abba Sikra thinks, and he says to him, nekot nafshecho bikitzirei, I want you to make believe that indeed you are sick, you are deathly sick. Let the entire Yerushalayim come in to visit you and ask how you are doing. But at the same time, as part of the plan, I want you to bring something that stinks terribly, and put it in your bed or next to your bed. So that leimru denoch nafshe, people who come in because of the smell will think that you have died and you are headed for death and decomposition, the foul odor. Vili ayelu boch talmidoch, and at that point call in only your most trusted talmidim. Velo le ayel boch inish achrina, don't let anyone else come in. De lo rag le ragshon boch, so that they don't feel the kolil at that you are light. The inhu yad e, because you know, everyone knows, the chayo, a living being, is kolil mimeso. That a living body is lighter than dead weight, than someone who has died. Oved hoche. They agreed on the plan, and that's exactly what Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai does. Nichnas bo, and the only ones that he let in were Rabbi Eliezer mitzad echod and Rabbi Yoshua mitzad acher. Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua, two of his trusted talmidim, and he told them the plan. So they carry him in a bed, in a bier, in a coffin, saying that he died, this smelling foul piece of whatever was right next to him so that they can smell that the body is decomposing.
Did Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua know the plan?
Oh, yes, yes. No, they were part of the plan.
Or did they not know?
No. He was very much alive. They were part of the plan, and that's what Abba Sikra said. Start out with everyone thinking that you're sick, but ultimately the end of the plan, the move that you make, will only be with your trusted Talmidim. And he chose Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. And these two carry him. Kimotu lepischa, when they come to the Pesach, to the gates of Yerushalayim, they wanted to pass. In order to pass, you have to open up the gates. Who do you think was guarding the gates, if not the mob? Bo'u lemidkerei, they wanted to take swords, spears, and stab the bier to make sure that no one was alive, because obviously they were going to prevent anyone from getting out alive. Because if you start to, if the word gets out that one gets out alive, the second one gets out alive, the mob will have a mob rule on their hands. They won't, if there's a possibility to get out alive, why push yourselves to such extreme? Bo'ulamit kere, they wanted to stab the body to make sure that indeed it was dead. Amar laho, so he, Abba Sikra, said to them, Yomru rabon dakru, people will say that what? That you stabbed the body of our Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai to make sure he was dead. Bo'u lemitchafei, they wanted to take and dump the coffin over and to knock him out to see if indeed he is dead. They wanted to push him out of the coffin. Omar lehos, Abba Sikra says to them, I don't understand you guys. Yomru rabon debachol. He went ahead and they said that they dumped the corpse of the body out on the ground to make sure he was dead, and then you put him back into the coffin and let him go. What are you guys, crazy? Poshule. So they went ahead and they opened up the gates. Poshule bova. Bova is the sha'ar, like bova kama, sha'ar rishon, bova mitzia, the middle sha'ar, the gate. They opened the gates, v'nafak, and he went out. Kimota lehasom, when he finally reached the camp of the Roman generals, Omar, he said to the general, Shloma aloch malko, Shloma aloch malko. Peace be unto you, my king, peace be unto you, my king. Omalei, whereupon the Roman general said, for that, Michayavas tre kitola, you should be killed twice for what you just said. First, Choda, the first time you deserve to die is Delav Malka Ano, because you are calling me a king and I am not the king. And that's a chutzpah. The Kokoris Li Malka, you're calling me king. Vesu, and the second time you deserve to die is E Malka Ano, if it be true that I were king, Ad Ha'idna Amailo Oseis Lagaboy. Up until now, why didn't you come? If you're able to get out, and I know why you're here. You're here to strike some kind of appeasement. You're here to strike some kind of a bargain. If that be the case, what are you doing here now? Why weren't you here months ago? What did you wait for until now? If you indeed are the leader, prepared to deliver a peace treaty that the mobs will listen to, why did you wait until now? You should be killed for that alone, that you've postponed. Omalei, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai answers. And again, do you feel the vexation? Any which way, he's doomed to die. Dika amaret lav malka ana. That which you just said, that you're not a king. Ivra, in truth, malka at, you are indeed a king. De'i lav malka at, because if you weren't king material, lo mimsere Yerushalayim biyadeich, Jerusalem wouldn't be in your hands, dichsiv, because we in our tradition have a pasuk that Yeshayahu prophesied v'halavanon, Lebanon, and that's not Lebanon of today. Lebanon, you will soon see, is the Beis Hamikdash. Be'adir yipol, will only fall in the hands of the extremely mighty. Ve'ein adir ela melech, there are a lot of strong arm guys, but only a king is going to take it. Dichsiv v'hoya adiro mimenu, etc. and so forth. Again, using psukim to prove prove this. Ve'ein levanon ela beis hamikdash. Sheneemar, Moshe Rabbeinu says, in this week's Sedra, let me cross over to see Hahar Hatov Hazeh, v'halavanon. Let me see this wonderful mountain. V'halavanon. What is Levanon? That I want to see the Beis Hamikdash built. Continues Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the Kalmar, I Malka Ano Amailo Koosis Lagaboy Ad Hoidna. And your second statement, that I should be sentenced to death a second time. For what? For the offense of not having come earlier. Says Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Ad Hoidna Biryone de Isbon Lo Shafkinon. Up until now, the Biryonim, the mob, the Isbon that were among us, Lo Shavkinon, didn't allow me to do it. I was at the mercy of the mob. Again, I have no choice. And he says it openly. Omalei, whereupon the Roman general challenges Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and says, you are captive of the mob? I'll give you a mashal, let me show you. Ilu chovis shel dvash, udrakon karucha leha. If you had a container of honey and a drakon, similar to the word dragon, but it means a snake. If a snake, karucha leho, was wound around the honey, trying to get in to taste of the honey, what would you do? Lo hayu shovrim es achavich bishvil drakon? Wouldn't you have broken the jar of honey just to get rid of this snake, this poisonous snake? Sure you would have done that. Why didn't you break the walls down and get out? You had the dragon of the Biryonim against you, so you break the walls down and get out. Ishtik. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai keeps quiet. Again vexation, he has no answer. Kiri Ale, Rabbi Yosef, Itema, Rabbi Akiva. When this was told later on, Rabbi Akiva explained, some say it was Rabbi Yosef who explained, that this is what Yeshayahu meant, that the Churban is going to come because Meshiv Chachamim Achor, because Chachomim, wise men, just like a Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, will be thrust back, v'da'atam yisachel, and their da'as, their sense of leadership, yisachel, will be totally overturned. Here comes this Roman general and asks Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, I don't understand you. You want peace. Where were you months ago before we had to spend all of this time, this money, this effort, and the lives of your people? Iboy Leila Meimar, what Rabbi Yochanan should have said to him, says Rabbi Akiva or Rabbi Yosef, Shaklinan Tzavto, V'shaklinan Leidle Darkon. This is Rabbi Akiva talking 75 years after the fact, 65 years after the fact. He said, you know what Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai should have said? Well, we just didn't find the tzavta. What we really should have done is find the pliers, a tongue, the shaklinon lei ledarkon, to take the snake, the katlinon lei, and kill it, the chavito shavkinon lei, and ultimately save the jar of honey. Now, you've got to read subconsciously into the words of Rabbi Akiva. Who is the snake? For the Roman general, the snake of the Biryonim. But when Rabbi Akiva says, you know, what Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai should have said was that the snake should have been controlled with the tongues, which Rabbi Akiva is this? There you are. And Rabbi Akiva is learning the Pasuk. Here you had a generation in the Churban. Go back to the Pasuk on line 72. Meshiv Chachomim Achor. The destruction was when Chachomim, when wise men, could not go ahead and take the helm of leadership, but they were thrust in the back. V'da'atom, and their Seichel Yisokel was overturned. They couldn't take the mobs and lead the mobs properly. I, Rabbi Akiva, will not do that. I will be the spiritual guide of these mobs to fight so that we have 3 years of independence. We'll see. I don't know that we'll get to it today. I don't know when you guys want to stop. You know, you just tell me stop and that's it. Huh? I'll repeat. I don't know. You want to just go on? Okay. All right. Look. Oh, that's a good idea. No. So maybe I'll talk it go on, and we'll learn it six tonight. Different. We'll continue on. All right. We'll stop it in a few minutes. But do you feel how woven into this entire segment is nothing more than one theme? And that's the vexation of leadership. Just any which way you turn, look to your leaders, you want leadership, and it just isn't going to go.
This is the way Hashem wants it.
That is... That's... There's no question about it. There's only one problem. And it's a psychological problem. We have to look at two personalities no one can touch as being tzaddikim. The juxtaposition of the personalities of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who saves a Klal Yisrael in the year 66, 67, 68, and the same tzaddik, 65 years later, Rabbi Akiva, who in the years 132, 133, 134, and 135 also saves a Klal Yisrael. One does it by capitulation, by kissing the feet of a general who ultimately was to become the emperor, and the other one goes and becomes the spiritual generator of a Bar Kokhba revolution and is ready to call him Mashiach. And the only thing that he's wrong about is that ultimately it turned out that this one wasn't Mashiach, but for 3 years did he have something going? So you're going to call that wrong? You're going to say because Bar Kokhba ultimately perished at Beitar or elsewhere, wherever it was, you're going to say that the 3 years that they had independence was wrong? Impossible. Oh. Okay, except for one thing. I shudder to think if there wasn't a Bar Kokhba revolution. Churban Bayis, we would have always had Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's to teach us in every door, as we will learn maybe later tonight, that there's no question about it. Anyone knows that Ein ha'umah zot umah ela biglal toratenu, the way Rav Sadia Gaon says. That the center of our gravity, of our existence, is Torah. And in every generation it must be renewed. But was there another Rabbi Akiva? And the answer is no. And if there wasn't a Rabbi Akiva, I dare say, shuddering to my core, to my roots, I dare say that we would not know ever again how to walk back, komim yusli alseinu, with head up straight, walking back to defend our land against a bunch of wild animals. The Churban is the Churban. There are no two ways about it. But what did they do between Pesach and Atzeres, between Pesach and Shavuos? They established a separate Churban for Rabbi Akiva. Because in those days the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva died. Why? Shelo nagu kovod ze bazeh, because they couldn't get their act together. And Rabbi Akiva was harried, and he couldn't get them to cement and to solidify their efforts to make sure that the revolution continue on another year and another year and another year. I dare say that we would have been packed in, that the Golus would have been 4,000 years, not 2,000 years, not 1948, if there wasn't a Rabbi Akiva. If there wasn't a Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, there would have been someone else. There would have been a Rabbi Yeshua with a plan, there would have been a Rabbi Eliezer with a plan, there would have been definitely someone else. I don't know whether it would have been the same plan, but it would have been a Tein Miyavne v'Chachamel. There are no two ways about it. I'm guaranteed of that. Absolutely guaranteed. We've seen it in 2,000 years.
I know what you're talking about. Rabbi Yochanan set the whole tenor for Jewish life in Galut. The whole sense of Jewish life without a base hamikdash.
Okay.
Without that change in orientation, you had nothing. But you went down with the building.
Correct.
And you're telling me so flippantly that there would have been someone else if not him?
Yep.
Just the way Mordechai said to Esther?
That's correct.
Not us.
I am.
Where?
Where? I can show you anywheres and everywheres in the things that I quote. I mean flippantly, I'll use that. Just on page 19 and 20. Right? Just page 19 and 20. You want to come back to this in the afternoon? This is what I'll learn in the afternoon. Okay, this is what I'll learn in the afternoon. Page 19 and 20. Al mo of the ha'aretz. Right? Halavai osi shachochu v'sarosi shemoru. The whole introduction to Echa Rabba. Yeah. Okay, I said it, and I repeated it again. But I dare say that we may not have been able to ever know how to walk back and stand komimiusle alseinu, erect in our own land, if it wasn't for Rabbi Akiva and Bar Kokhba, who directly imitated what the Hashmonaim did. Directly imitated. Elamah, there was one basic difference. Hashmonaim still had a Beis HaMikdash. Rabbi Akiva didn't have a Beis HaMikdash. Without question. And that's why we have a separate entity of national mourning for the collapse of the revolution of Bar Kokhba, which is between what? Between Pesach and Shavuos. The period of year when we become a nation, when we've come May Abdus L'Cherus, and Cherus doesn't exist until when? Until we stand at Har Sinai and accept the Torah, a Torah which sets us apart as separate and different than anyone else, so that then and only then can we walk into the promised land, which is separate and set apart the Esa Kedushos from any and every other land in the world. I said it a second time. You want me to say it a third time? Just a third time, I'll bring you more proof, different proof.
Why didn't Rabbi Akiva succeed where the Hashmonaim succeeded? He was on a higher Madrega of Torah than they were.
Okay.
Separate entity unto itself. I accept the challenge to have to go ahead and prove my contention, and you know where I prove. Only one thing. I only know one thing. Gemara and Midrash. That's all I know. Okay? Nothing else. I accept the challenge. I say it publicly. But I said it. It is not... This flippancy is mere veneer. It is probably a 25-year study that I have made of these particular sources. It's your tape.
Yochanan Torah lives today in Talmud Bavli and studied throughout the world.
Go ahead.
For Rabbi Akiva, he's in there, obviously. He's in the Mishnah.
All of the Mishnahs, Rabbi Akiva's. Stam Mishnah is like whom? Where did Rabbi Meir learn his Mishnayos from? It was the Talmud of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva was one of the first, not the only one, to go ahead and to do what Rabbi Yehuda Anasi did. Elamah, instead of being a revolutionary, Rabbi Yehuda Anasi was a wealthy man, so he went ahead and was able to finance the Mishnayos. Toro gedula b'mokom echad. Rabbi Akiva went ahead and he had to finance a revolution. The concept of komimius li'atzenu, of being able to stand up erect in a land, and that's the only natural habitat of the Jew. Now this is in no way denigrating what Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says. What Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai did, in no way. But I'm telling you clearly that if we were to assume that a Yochanan ben Zakkai didn't exist, clearly someone else would have done it.
and would have done the same thing.
Because there's no chiddush in what Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai really said.
No. No, he is not very quiet. He is very vocal. Now, this may be the last thing I say, because some of you are going to have your minds blown, so... Well, hold on. Yeah? All right, he was a quiet man, there's no question about it. I'm not denying that. But I'm talking about in terms... Was he necessarily, you know, a quiet... Leave me alone. You know, if you just let me sit in my room, I'm talking about myself now, if you don't mind it. If you let me sit in my room and don't bother me, the phone shouldn't ring, I should be able to just look at a book and sit until my back just wrenches out on me because I've been sitting in one position, and then look at my watch and notice that I've been sitting there for 11 hours straight. I didn't do a thing, but just sit there. I'd be happy in life. I really would be happy in life. That wasn't Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had a very clear-cut conception of what his so-called politics is going to be. And it was the politics of appeasement. Appeasement of an army that was a far greater war machine, or better still, the greatest war machine that existed in the history of civilized man, in the history of recorded history. You little Bnei Yisrael are going to fight them off? Are you crazy? The Parthians, in other words, the Persians, were animals of warriors. They were the ones who were able to stave off the forays, the conquering of Rome in the Mideast. Us? How can we compare to that? Yeah. That's right. That's correct. Klausner. Right.
We are not going to lose.
Okay. Klausner. Josef Klausner is one of three master historians of the second of the period of the second Beis HaMikdash. Is he frum? The answer is no. He was in his Hebrew university, and he was not frum. Was he schooled in the sources? Yeah, towards the end. Okay. When the Malon Chamovitz dances, there's no question that the things happen there. No question about it. Okay. Nationality. Yeah, fine. I'm not putting him down. But anyone who will want to touch him on that account and say, well, his history is not history, I mean, it's utter nonsense. Klausner wrote on the second bias, massive, massive works, several works. And he describes the political situation in several places. I just chose one. You use the word zealot. There were zealot Pharisees who wanted to go out and fight, motivated by mitzvahs. There were the Biryonim who wanted to fight just for the sake of war. There were other Pharisees. There were moderate Pharisees who didn't want war but weren't going to throw in the towel altogether. What does this moderate Pharisee want? What does he want? He wants to be able to strike a deal with the ruling power where we could have what is essentially most important to us and you'll have what is most essentially important to you. What did Rome want of Israel? It only wanted taxes. That's all it wanted. It wanted taxes. And it wanted to be part of this empire confederation. Give me a minute. Give me a minute. I'll prove the assumption for you in a moment. And in return for those taxes, we Rome, will not impose anything on you that truly is against your nature. Okay, let me make the point. Hold on. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai struck a very interesting formula with Rome. You'll get your taxes. And tamely Yadna v'chachomeho, give me my scholars, but I promise that I will not teach my scholars anything about nationalism, revolution, messianism, to bring back Chadesh Yomenu Kekedem. Is it a deal? I will not teach Hilchos Malachim, kings. I will not teach Hilchos Sanhedrin, internal organization. That I'll leave to you. Let me have ritual religion. I'll teach brachas, I'll teach Shabbos, I'll teach kashrus, I'll teach Yom Tov. Is it a deal? And they struck a deal. Now listen to me carefully. Is there someone else whom you know by name who was of the same political bent, and as a result of it, he was done in by his brethren, by the Jews of his day? Famous. I'm sure you knew him. No. Gedaliel didn't live in Rome. That was in Bubba. I see you people don't read too much of the New Testament.
Yeah, sure.
Three times in the Gospel of Mark, Luke, and Matthew, actually it's Matthew, Luke, and Mark, there is a story about the Pharisees coming to Jesus and asking him a shaila. Rebbe, they said, the generals here in Rome want us to pay taxes. Are we allowed to go ahead and pay taxes to the Romans? Because after all, they are Rishoyim. They are thieves. Whereupon Jesus said to them, you are a bunch of hypocrites. Why do you call us hypocrites? He says, take out, please, a coin from your pocket. Whereupon they all take out the coin from their pocket. If you want, I'll give you the exact chapter so you'll be able to see it in the original. And they took out the coin and he says, what is on the coin? He says, it's the picture of the Caesar. Whereupon he said, as I said, you are hypocrites. Render to Caesar what is Caesar's. Render means give back to Caesar what is Caesar's. And render unto God what is God's. Three times the exact story is repeated in the New Testament. It is identical. There are no digressions one from the other.
Which is unusual. Very unusual.
Okay? It is one of the basic political stances that there were those who wanted to strike a deal with Rome. Taxes you want, we'll take and we'll give you. Let us worry about Shabbos, Kashrus, Yom Tov, Mila, and that's it. Politics, let's drop. We'll do it your way to satisfy you, but let us have our ritual law. This is why I say that if it wouldn't have been Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, lahavdil elef alfei v'rivvei havdos, it was a fixed political stance to separate what you call ritual life and religious life from the political implications of the day. And that was the only thing that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai did. It was not original to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. He was the one who was able to get out of Yerushalayim through the plan that we did. But if it wouldn't have been him, there would have been someone else if they survived. But clearly, there were at least three gishot, three approaches to the politics. The politics of the Biryonim, which was, we're not going to, down to the last man. Down to the last man. But we're not giving in. We're not going down on a sinking ship. No compromise. The second was, there were zealots who were Purushim, in other words, Talmidei Chachomim, who saw the inseparability of halacha from the fight. You want to call them today, what? Kushemunim? Who find their entire fight, the machteret, the underground here, find their entire fight because they wear tzitzis out, because they have beards, because they sit and learn, because they want nachlata aretz, they want to go ahead and make sure to sanctify every piece of ground, because they learned in Rav Kook's yeshiva. That's the second one. Then you have the third, who are the pacifists. Let's
which
just have peace,
right,
and that's it. Can't answer that. We've said we're not here. We are not. Wait a minute. The word right or wrong, you love pat answers. Well, maybe when you deal all day long with Bloomberg law firms that give you pat answers to all your problems, you can come and say right or wrong. Isn't it? Remember that where I started an hour ago was the vexation of not knowing.
Yeah.
Of not knowing.
It doesn't matter more, I thought.
I don't know if the Gemara tells us. Let's see if we can discover that. I don't know. Now, again, I want to repeat. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, I'm going to put him down? No, you don't hear what I'm saying. Never. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai as being the genius architect who came up with a plan second to no one else, that no one else thought of, that's where you've learned something today. That's not true. Even Lahavdil Jesus was of the same political bent and hashkofa as a Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. I may backtrack and say who was right and who was wrong. Probably in the year 70, there's no question that Rabbi Yochanan was right. The Rabban Shalom, in his infinite wisdom, by allowing Rabbi Akiva to be born, let's say, a generation later, spared us the anguish of never having a Rabbi Akiva. Probably Rabbi Akiva would have been brutalized. But 65 years later, by the year 132, if it wasn't for a Rabbi Akiva, and if it wasn't for a Rabbi Akiva, Yavne couldn't have existed. 65 years later, political changes. Hor Yomel Salom, you remember what happened then again. But Binu, says Rav Shimshon Refuah, you better understand with intelligence, Bina, Shinos Dor Vador, how every generation changes. And just because Rav Shimshon Refuah Hirsch paskin that this is what you do politically or this is what you do communally does not make it correct, and he was the first one to say that for 200 years after his death. Because of the Shinos, because of the change, Shinui, of Dor Vador, of situations. So maybe that'll bring you a little salve and a little comfort and get your Irish down a little. No chas v'shalom, I am not pogeya in Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Okay? But you'll pardon the expression. If you want, I have buried here in a cover of Hebrew letters that I got in Yerushalayim. See, I bought this New Testament in Yerushalayim, and I took from the cleaners. You see? I tried to clean it a little, so I keep it 9 years from the Mach Besavni Kli Yavesh, and I cover it. If you want, I have it marked off three times in Matthew, Luke, and Mark, where this story of what Jesus' orientation was politically vis-a-vis Rome, and what was the orientation of the Sanhedrin who so-called betrayed him, or who were ready to do him, who were they? They certainly weren't with Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. They weren't the moderate zealots. They were the extremist zealots, or the zealot Pharisees. Not the Biryonim. You hear? And that's why he got hung up on the boards. That's why they wanted to do him in. There were political circumstances between this one Jew and the other one. No? I ask you, Lubavitch and Satmar are fighting only over political stands? Only over religious stands? Or there's some political issues over there of who can be on top, who has greater numbers, who has greater political clout in the New York scene to be able to finance their welfare programs and everything else. And welfare, I'm saying with a small W, that, you know, whatever they need to maintain a viable community. These are political stances. These are not necessarily religious stances. As I've been speaking to you over and again and repeating myself, we are talking about psychological and sociological issues here. And not only the right and the wrong of a Gemara of theological issues. Oh yeah, we can learn theological lessons from it. And these were the times of Jesus. And these were the times Lahavdil Elef Alfei Havdolos of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. And this is the vexation of leadership, of not knowing which way to go. You want to call it a break now? Go ahead. Go.
Let's take the year 66. The Roman are ruling. The headquarters of the Roman emperor is Chova Bayit 24, I don't know where, in the center of Jerusalem. All of a sudden we see now a scenario where no Romans in the city. The city is closed. The Biryonim are controlling everything. Where are the Romans? Jerusalem was the Roman capital.
Caesarea.
But they were in Jerusalem, the head.
I hear what you're saying. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
They used to have the Colosseum.
So, Mardubecha, they threw him out.
They threw him out.
The Birionim. No question.
They were under the notion, fellows, let's fight. We'll be able to beat them. And there were many groups, besides the one that we know, there were also the Sukkim, and there were others. Everyone had his own opinion. But the strongest among them was the Birionim. Another thing, what Rashi says, I don't understand Rashi, he says, I'm ashamed of it. I think Birionim in Hebrew means the dominating power. That's a Birion, that's what we use in today's modern Hebrew. A Birionim Sholtim. That's it.
Tell me, to force the issue, would you burn down your food supplies? Or would you take and capture them and put them underground?
That's what I'm
asking. No?
The only reason I see why they burned the food, because as long as there was security and safety surrounded in the world, the Romans were very powerful. Because the Romans didn't move. They were outside, probably down on the other side of Arab Sufim, with 600,000 soldiers there. But they didn't move because they figured they're going to have tremendous losses if they're going to move. So there's nothing to do. Now the Brioni says, join us, let's make a fort and be there. No. So what are the goals in the burn?
You're just contradicting yourself. You said the wall must have been very strong and Roman Romans fight because they were going to lose. They were going to lose too many men. That being the situation, the Brioni would have done the same thing and said, well, hold out. The food, we don't have to burn the food now. The food eventually will run out and the people will come to us then too. Why bring the food?
No, but the thing is, they were afraid probably the Romans are going to reinforce themselves, maybe they're going to bring some agents from Persia or something from Egypt. At the moment,
they have the same problem.
I commented before to the rabbi, I said, this is an assumption. Everything is an assumption. I didn't mean our assumption. I mean the assumption of that particular group. But Yochanan is that I had an assumption we will not beat them. Probably he must have been right. I don't know if he was right. But the Brioni saw it in another way. And by the way, again, I want to emphasize, Brioni does not mean the way I see from Rashi. The Brioni was the ruling power in Jerusalem. They had the force. They were the majority as far as the strength goes. They were the most determined. You could see by their own leader, he was afraid because it was a determined group.
They were most fanatic.
It's Americana. They were a determined group.
All right. I hear what you're saying. I'm accepting it. I don't know that I agree with you. And again...